Good morning. My name is Patsy Lloyd, and I'm a student at George Washington University. And I had a wonderful opportunity to work with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene in the Bureau of STD Control. And so I'm going to share with you the analyses that I worked on there. Co-authors are Preeti Patel and Julie Schillinger. They were my mentors while I was there this summer, and they were very helpful in every way possible in doing this. So the title again is Defining and Describing HIV and STD Core Group Membership Using Population-Based Surveillance Data. So just to give you a background, the Bureau of STD Control at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene collects data on several reportable STDs or STIs, and they also conduct partner notifications for cases of syphilis. So STI have been shown to increase the risk of transmitting and acquiring HIV, as most of you know, and STI and HIV core group members are individuals who disproportionately contribute to the transmission of STI and HIV. So the idea or the concept of core group membership is really key in trying to identify individuals who are contributing to HIV and STI infection. Identification of core group members then would enable the targeting of services that would prevent transmission of STI and HIV. So there have been previous definitions that are used to identify core group members, and these incorporate behavioral data as well as surveillance data. And so we ended up using surveillance data that we had from different bureaus within the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. So the two main objectives that I'm going to present here today are listed here. So the first is to use measures of HIV incidence and subsequent STI to define HIV and STI core group members for New York City. And then secondly, to describe the demographic and the societal factors associated with core group membership. So the data sources, to give you an idea of where I'm actually getting this information from, there are four different data sources that I used. There's data from the HIV registry, which collects information of all persons that are diagnosed with HIV, or reported with HIV, I should say. So this is all persons living with HIV or AIDS, and the time period was between 2001 through 2005. From the STD registry, I also had information about all individuals that were reported with any of the seven STDs, STIs. And then the Department of Corrections, I had information about individuals who had been admitted to the Department of, to any of the facilities in the Department of Corrections, any of the jails. And then also Department of Homeless Services, or DHS, I was able to get information about individuals that were admitted to any of the homeless shelters that are run by New York City. And so this essentially is a cross-match of all these four different registries. So there is a link essentially conducted to match all of these individuals that were in any of these registries. So the data were cross-matched using name, gender, address, and date of birth. And the data were then de-identified, so they were stripped of all their identifying information so that I was able to work with them. And a single identifier then was used to link across these different registries. So in order to conduct this analysis, I had to create an analytic data set. So my analytic data set included individuals who had any STI or HIV events with a known borough. So I had to know where these individuals were located. Secondly, I included STI diagnoses of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and early syphilis with specimen collection dates between January 1st, 2001 and December 31st, 2005. So to give you some definitions, in order to create these, to identify core group members, I essentially created an STI diagnosis category. So I had these different groups that I defined. So I had individuals that were either based on one single infection or also based on repeat infection. So individuals that were either diagnosed with any STI during that time period, individuals diagnosed with any syphilis, GC, CT, or persons living with HIV or AIDS. I also created groups of individuals that were diagnosed with two cases, so essentially had syphilis, were diagnosed with syphilis twice during that study period, individuals that had GC and syphilis, individuals that had CT or chlamydia and syphilis, or GCGC, so two cases of gonorrhea or two instances within that study period. GCCT, so gonorrhea and chlamydia, and also persons living with HIV/AIDS that were then diagnosed with a subsequent STI. So individuals could have been in all of these categories. They could be identified as in any of these categories. So they are not mutually exclusive. So the measures that I looked at were incidence of HIV among these different STI diagnosis groups, and secondly, incidence of subsequent STI among the different STI diagnosis groups. And so when I calculated the incidence of HIV among STI diagnosis groups, I'm specifically looking at incidence density rates. So I'm calculating person time for each of the individuals that are in my analytic data set. So this excludes individuals for this incidence of HIV among STI diagnosis groups. This excludes individuals that were already diagnosed with HIV. And I calculated an incidence rate, which I'm going to present per 100,000 person days. I also calculated the incidence of subsequent STI among these STI diagnosis groups, and this includes all individuals that were diagnosed with STI, and I looked for when they were diagnosed with a subsequent STI. I was able to conduct some bivariate and multivariate analyses for looking at the association between the demographic and societal characteristics and core group membership. And in order to do this, I also had to put some exclusions in place. So I excluded individuals that were not at least 16 years of age at any time during the study period. I also looked specifically at these specific variables, so age, and I categorized these in use that as a categorical variable, race and ethnicity, borough at the first STI diagnosis, the type of provider at the first STI diagnosis, incarceration during the study period, and the use of a single adult or family shelter during the study period. And I conducted chi-score tests of association and also calculated odds ratios. My level of significance was 0.05. So the first objective, again, I wanted to use measures of HIV incidence and subsequent STI to define HIV and STI core group members for New York City. So here's just a schematic diagram to give you an idea of what my data set looked like. If I were to, when I matched the STD and HIV registry, roughly 174,000 individuals were in my STI registry. And in the HIV registry, there are approximately 97,000 individuals. So there were roughly 5,000 individuals that were in both my STI registry and my, or in the HIV registry. And so, figure two here, I'm showing the HIV incidence rates. Again, these are incidence density rates. And I'm looking at each of the STI diagnosis groups, and I'm looking specifically at gender, so comparing males and females. If you look on the x-axis, that axis essentially just gives you the incidence rates per 100,000 person days. And along my y-axis, I'm looking at the different diagnosis groups. So you can see that among individuals that were diagnosed with any STI, I'm not sure if you can see that number from where you're sitting, but for males, the incidence density rate was 1.51. So meaning a male who was diagnosed with any STI during the study period, their HIV incidence rate was 1.51. So when you look at all of these plots together, you can see that among individuals that were diagnosed with any syphilis, and among individuals or among males diagnosed with syphilis, so that had at least two diagnoses of syphilis during the study period, they had much elevated rates of HIV. You can also see if you look at gonorrhea syphilis and chlamydia syphilis, that these rates are also very high. So individuals that were diagnosed with any syphilis, or if they were diagnosed with a GC syphilis, CT syphilis, and syphilis, those rates of HIV were also very high. So roughly, for syphilis, the rate was 12 per 100,000 person days compared to any of the other groups. So if we were to look at just a GC, so gonorrhea, the incidence rate was about almost four per 100,000 person days. Figure 3 shows you the incidence rates of subsequent STI among these different STI diagnosis groups and also stratified by gender. So if I look at single infection and repeat infection, I can see that there are overall differences that individuals that are diagnosed with repeat infections, so that had more than one of these STI, were at a higher rate for being diagnosed with another STI. So if we were to look at the same group we looked at before, which was syphilis, among males that were diagnosed with syphilis twice during the study period, their rate of having another STI diagnosis was about 30 per 100,000 person days. When I look at gonorrhea, so individuals, both males and females, that were diagnosed with gonorrhea twice during the study period, I see that their rates of having another STI are also very high. They're around the range of about 51 per 100,000 person days. So we define New York City core group members as, in two different ways. By looking at those plots that I just showed you, we identified individuals with at least one diagnosed case of syphilis, and also individuals with repeat STI. So our second objective was then to describe the demographic and the societal factors that are associated with core group members using this definition that I provided above. And again, we calculated adjusted odds ratios to describe these individuals. And we stratified the data, so we looked at females and males separately. And just some highlights here, I'm not providing all the information or all the results that we obtained. But the highlights, if we were to look at just females, we see that core group members were more likely to be younger and of Black, Hispanic, or other ethnic and racial group. And were also diagnosed with the first STI from a jail, detention facility, or other provider. So when I look at where these individuals or where these females were diagnosed with their first STI, I see compared to a STD clinic, the odds ratio is roughly 1.2. So females were more likely to be diagnosed in a jail as compared to an STD clinic. Women who were core group members, they're more likely to be diagnosed from other providers as compared to an STD clinic. The odds ratio is 1.5 or 1.6. Among males that were diagnosed with an STI, core group members were more likely to be younger, of white race and ethnic group. They were more likely to be diagnosed with their first STI at STD clinics or other providers. So they were less likely to be diagnosed in a jail or facility compared to an STD clinic. And they were more likely to be residents of Manhattan at their first STI diagnosis. Among females diagnosed with an STI, core group members were also more likely to be incarcerated during the study period, and also utilizers of DHS services during the study period. So they were admitted to either a single or family shelter during the study period. And also males diagnosed with STI, core group members were less likely to be incarcerated during the study period. So some of the limitations in this analysis, very quickly, there wasn't information about vital status among the individuals that were in the STI registry. There are some analyses with the HIV registry where they are able to link with the vital statistics, but there isn't any for the STI registry. So only the year of death is known in the HIV registry, and the calculation of incidence rate assumes that all individuals are alive at the end of the study period. So since I don't have information about whether or not these individuals are still alive, we can see that that's going to limit our analysis. And also the STI surveillance data lacks complete race and ethnicity information. And this is what we heard in the previous talk too. And also there's uncertainty about the incident date of HIV acquisition. This goes back to the same thing that was brought up in the last talk, that we don't really know when the individuals were actually were infected with HIV. And also, the results may not be representative of undiagnosed and unreported STI. We know that there are a lot of infections that's not reported, and so we're only looking at the reported cases, and so there in itself is also a limitation. And also, utilization of DHS services may not be representative of all homeless individuals. We know that there are a lot of individuals that don't seek any type of shelter in the city, and so also we would be underestimating that. So some of the conclusions from this analysis, again, this was very descriptive, and it was some of the conclusions are that incidence of HIV and subsequent STI estimated from population-based surveillance data can be used to identify core group members in New York City. So although there are differences between males and females, core group members are more likely to be diagnosed in settings other than STD clinics. So an implication then is that providers that are diagnosing STI should use STI history to advise patients of marked elevation for risk of HIV. So if they know that an individual or a patient that comes in that is diagnosed with an STI was diagnosed with an STI before that, then the provider can provide some more information to them about their risk of HIV. Also, groups should be targeted for partner notifications, and those individuals can include individuals diagnosed with syphilis, repeat STI, and also persons living with HIV that are diagnosed with STI. Also, among females diagnosed with an STI, history of an incarceration and use of homeless services are also significant predictors of core group membership. So providers that are diagnosing STI should also use history of incarceration or history of homeless services to advise females of their elevation of risk for HIV. And also, correctional facilities and homeless shelters should provide opportunities for enhanced testing or treatment among females. And so I want to acknowledge everyone in the Bureau of STD Control at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene that helped me on this analysis.
Thank you, Patsy. We have about 5 minutes for questions. If you could step up to the microphone and introduce yourself and the question that you may have. And I'm also going to invite the next three speakers to please join me at the table.
Yeah, I didn't mention it here. I do have another slide here. And what I did was that I did try to adjust for the fact that the individual could have been diagnosed with or could have had HIV prior to that STI. And so what I did is I essentially allowed these different intervals for each of these different STDs. So for chlamydia, a person would have had to have been diagnosed with chlamydia 28 days after they were diagnosed with HIV to ensure that really they had acquired the STI infection after their HIV. And so 28 days for chlamydia, 19 days for gonorrhea, 35 days for primary syphilis, 84 days for secondary syphilis, and 194 days for early latent syphilis. Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. The data set that I used did not have information about risky behaviors, so I did not have any information about whether or not they were heterosexual or homosexual. I did not have that information, unfortunately. They do have that information in the STD registry, but the data that I worked with that was matched did not have that information.
Terrific. Thank you.